The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
I have a module on rapport in the course, and it's one of the books. So rapport is really simple. Really, all people prefer others reflecting themselves back to them. That's what rapport stands for. Really, all people prefer others reflecting themselves. That's the acronym. Yeah. And so what happens is we're basically, as humans, narcissistic people. We're self-absorbed.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in what you want. I'm interested in what I want.
It's human nature. You got a lot on your mind.
That's exactly right. So you're out there trying to make a living doing what you do for your wife, your family, your dreams, your goals, your desires, not mine, right? So when you go see clients, that's not really a bad thing.
You just got to recognize it. Yeah.
That's right. So when you do that, if you learn how to actually get into their world and be it more about influencing for the proper right reasons of what you're bringing to the table, man, you'll start, your sales will increase. They'll just go up naturally because you'll stop being so, so salesy, I guess would be the way
it turns. The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hi, I'm Don W. Long, and I have spent the last 35 years of my life building businesses. I have either founded or co-founded 6 different companies and had a lot of experience and a lot of look at success and also failure, and am really coaching and consulting a lot of companies and helping them take their business to the next level.
All right, Don. So thanks for coming on the podcast. I appreciate it. I think your assistant, Lizeth, found me somehow. She didn't really tell me how. I didn't ask her. So
I think that was the factor, Lizeth. Yep.
So she's looking out there looking for business podcasts and sales things and motivational stuff. Cause you said you've been on a bunch of podcasts, right?
I have. I was just on, it was on an interesting one. It just came out today. It's a quicker turnaround, but the lady with the Washington Times, found an article that I was reading and reached out to her, and she put me on the podcast. And so it was pretty cool experience. I've been on several this week.
Yeah, I'm sure Washington Times. Yeah, I'm sure they don't want to put out a podcast in 90 days. So I'm a little bit behind.
Doesn't really help them. It's actually hers, but she's one of the writers there. And so she had wrote an article that I really liked. So I reached out to her, and I was surprised she got back with me, to be honest with you. But hey, it just kind of connected. So it was really, really powerful.
Yeah, I think
podcast.
it's a good way to get out there and meet different people. Well, I appreciate her connecting, Lizeth connecting us and meeting you. And I've been reading your sales book, but admittedly so, haven't finished it. So I probably have, good. I told you last time, I probably have like 6 books going on at all times. I got hard copies and then you sent me yours, which is on the computer. I can't read it on Kindle. And then I got ones I listen to in the car. So I'm always, so if I ask you a question about someone else's book, don't be insulted. I'm kidding.
It's all good.
I don't mix that. I haven't, my dementia hasn't gotten to that level yet. So
I hear you.
But I know that you're a, you know, a successful, a bit of a serial entrepreneur. You've started businesses, you've sold businesses. It kind of led you to the speaking, consulting, writing, guiding, mentoring that you do. So maybe we go back and you can take me through, you know, when you're younger, when you started, what businesses, because I don't know anything about what the businesses did and what they were, where they came from, and how you got started with different things.
Okay. I'd love it. Yeah.
Okay. Let's do it. So where do you want to start?
Oh, you want to, okay.
We're on the mic. Oh, we're live.
Okay.
Not live.
So at the end of the day, back in, the reason I wrote the sales book, that's probably a good thing to bring up. The sales book was actually kind of a accident actually. And, so I had a friend of mine who I had known for, I don't know, 8 or 10 years. And he started a business and wanted to actually learn how to sell because he didn't think he could sell. And so I told him I'd get together with him over coffee. And this has been years ago. And he's kind of a left brain type guy. He was a musician and he did lighting. He could do like lighting. He's world class in that area. He did lighting and recording. He could probably do a show for like Led Zeppelin or something like that. He's that good, you know.
Real
so
ladies.
he had the skill set, you know, of the business thing that he was going into, but he felt like he couldn't talk to people. So we got together over a cup of coffee for about 6 weeks and chatted back and forth. And what I ended up doing is I'm like, okay, let me do this. I'm going to record voice memos. I'm going to make it a point to kind of go through the top 10, 15 things that I've done in businesses and that I've trained other people concerning sales and rapport and stuff like that. And so I did these 15, 20 minute memos. And within 6 weeks of him taking the memos, his business quadrupled. And he came in one day to the coffee shop beaming, looked like he had had a born again experience or something, you know, he's just like full of life. Right.
Right. Sure. I'm sure he was.
Yeah. And he said, we need to put you, you know, we need to write a book. And so I took the compilation of the, basically all those talks and actually wrote out the book and had an editor in the beginning help me put it together. So it made sense. So it didn't sound like it was talks had been converted into a book.
Right. You wanted to flow a little bit.
Yeah. You wanted to be readable instead of you listening to it. So that's kind of how the sales book happened. And the title of the book, my publisher decided to put it in. It was actually going to be called, my course is called Selling from the Soul.
Okay.
How, you know, and so that I have a course as well that magnifies a lot of these principles and is more workbook format where people can get the audios and follow. They're like, it's 11 modules. So there's 11 audios and they kind of go with each one of the modules where you could either work on it yourself. I have kind of question and answers in the workbook,
right?
Or you could take that workbook and work on it with your sales teams. If you have teams.
So it's more than just a book. It's a roll your sleeves up.
Yeah. You got to interact with the thing. And
good.
So that's kind of the advantage of having a course. I love the workbook style for teams because I've built teams for years. I mean, anyone that's run any kind of business, if you get it over 5 people or 4 or 5 people, you've got teams, you know,
right.
So you want to, in the last company that I sold was almost 100 employees. So we had a pretty good sized business.
Okay.
And I wanted to develop something that I could teach at the corporate level if it's an S&P 500 company, or I could actually teach it to an entrepreneur that's just starting out and he's 1 or 2 people operation, you know. So I kind of wanted to fit both of those into this course and also into that book. And, you know, my beginning days, you know, talking about some of the things that I sold. So basically the reason I wrote the sales book is from the story that happened with my friend.
Right.
But I also realized that in the beginning of my journey into business, I had to sell or don't eat. It was kind of a tagline that I used in some of the talks.
Well, that's what happens with all of us when we get started, right?
That's right. So
they throw you to the wolves.
So my wife and I, we got married at 20 years old, very young. And, right. So I went out and I had started connected with some business guys that I had met through a friend of mine, and they were sharp. They could sell anything. They both went, they both played soccer at UNC Chapel Hill in North Carolina, and they were world-class, you know, soccer players. But this was back in the 80s. You couldn't make any money playing soccer unless you went overseas, you know, so it wasn't that big of a sport at the time. But anyway, I started hanging out with them, and I just, you know, they sold everything. I mean, we sold Krispy Kreme donuts to commercial vendors. We sold gray market cars from overseas, from Europe. You know, we sold vacuum cleaner services. We went and created a business that we actually sold the vacuum cleaners too, but we actually created a business where we would come and clean people's houses, vacuum their carpets and stuff like that. So that was kind of one of the things that we did. I had a worked on commission one time selling a tractor trailer course that taught people how to drive an 18-wheeler. Those were kind of the beginning days of the first two or three years to try to get my, you know, I really got a great education because I had to deal with so many different people, so many different types of people because they were kind of different businesses. Yes, I went, you know, nowadays it's not applicable, but I went door to door. So you got 15 or 20 seconds and that's it. And so I learned how to connect to people.
Now it may be harder, right? Because you can't even open the door.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, through all those lessons that we started, a little bit of everything in business. I had a business that drilled underground cable, you know, underground, you know. And that it was just okay. I had a fertilizer business. I had two different commercial landscaping management businesses. I sold one of those in the early 2000s, and that's the last one I sold was in 2018. And so I had a couple other things. We had six different things that we had incorporated, and I probably had another four or five that we didn't incorporate that I tried to make money doing. And so we really honed down to where I developed a couple companies that over the over about a 30-year period, and most of that in the last decade, we did about $100 million in sales. So
total,
we
between the companies.
Successful. Yeah.
Now, these two guys who were the soccer players, they were your partners?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, we were kind of partners in crime. They kind of worked for themselves, kind of independent contractors, and they taught me the ropes, and we did some business things together. We did network marketing. You know, we did a little bit of everything. And but they really knew how. They were sharp in a sense that they knew how to talk to people.
Right.
And, you know, I've realized that, you know, I had a kind of a gift for gab, I guess you would say, but I didn't realize it when I was 20 years old. And it was good to get around people who were sharp, sharper than me. Of course, at 20, everybody was sharper, it seemed like, than me. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, you hope when you're 20, you're able to receive it, not think like, I know this, you know.
That's right.
Plenty
That's
of 20 year olds. So, yeah. So with these guys, then I find that, you know, definitely selling is a learned skill. Like you can get better at it and learn it, but some guys just have it. People, they just something about them and the way they interact with people, they just kind of get it and they don't even think that they're doing anything special to them. It's just like, that's the way you deal with people and it works for them. It's, I've seen guys just go to the stratosphere because of it, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But a lot of people struggle.
I created an audio series called The Selling Blueprint.
Okay.
And it's something that I just usually it's people that I work with that I coach and mentor. I give them the audios because I go through, I think it's eight audios, six or eight. And I go through the DISC model. You're familiar with the personality profile DISC model.
Yeah.
I don't know if you. So and I go through that and I teach people that everyone has a blueprint and a way they sell, because the guy that I helped in the beginning that I was telling you about, he would not fit any normal prototype of a salesperson. You wouldn't hire him for a salesperson.
No, I'm sure.
But his business exploded because he learned the first couple of lessons that I teach people, which are non-traditional sales stuff that people don't think about. I teach people how to be the real them so they find their unique style of communicating
is really
what it's about.
Yeah.
And then out of that, be authentically you when you're with people, because, you know, hey, if you're out long enough, you know, when people are, you know, being fake or coming across like they're trying to smooze you.
Right.
Or do stuff
well, it's
like
because
that.
They're doing something they're not comfortable doing.
That's exactly right.
And so sales organizations do that all the time.
And it never, long term, it never works.
Never works. They end up quitting. They'll leave, whatever. Yeah.
That's right. And it ends up giving sales a bad name.
Right.
And it's like I tell people, look, if you're married, you had to sell your wife while marrying you for sure.
Yeah.
Especially if she's this good looking woman that you were just fell in love with. It's like you had to talk her into this thing.
Yeah. And if you were fake, she's not jumping on board. Yeah.
That's right. So I mean, it's like what I realize is in the whole thought behind it is I started talking to people about influence and not sales, because the original series is called The Selling Influence. That's what was going to be the name of the book.
Okay.
And so when you hear these audios, the old audios, I still have the old audios that I use for some of my salespeople, and I give them the whole set.
The term you do use in the book, right? You talk about it influence is. And selling.
It is. And so what I found out is that when I am connecting with you,
right,
one-on-one about something, whether I'm bringing it to the table or you've inquired or whatever, then what I look at is I really do look at, okay, I want to influence you into making the best decision for you, not for me.
Right.
And when I do that and I'm real with it, and I mean, at the end of the day, we have to, you know, you have to have a job and make money and sell and stuff if you're in that industry. But if you have enough discipline and you work enough, you will get enough clients is what I found with people.
Right. Finding the right people to do business.
Right. And if you can build your clients, the best buyers, you build them, then you'll have what I call lifetime clients that no one can steal, because you've made a connection at an emotional level. You've brought influence to them that has helped them build whatever it is they bought from you to build.
Right. Right.
You know,
Isn't that though what selling is, the proper way selling? Selling should be helping people to make the decision that they should be making that's for their benefit, not like tricking them into buying something. I mean, that's the old tin men, you know, used car salesman adage of people, they're just trying to rip me off. And that's not what real selling is.
That's right. Well, it never works except for short term. And what ends up happening is ends up blowing up on you if that's the way. And a lot of people get frustrated and leave the sales industry. And, you know, the biggest thing for me when I talk to people is I want to make sure that they're congruent, just like with your practice. And I've seen some of your emails. You know what you're offering people. I read through them. You're passionate about it. You want to help people build these different trusts and different things that you offer people. And there's a cost to that, but you're offering value to these people. And so believing in what you do is the third key that I kind of drill down on in whatever the product, service, or result you're offering. We start with the real you. Then I start with finding authentically how you communicate. And that's where it helps to have the sales blueprint teaching, because I basically go through every disc, the D, the I, the C on like four of the talks,
right?
Intro one, and then I break it down the other two. And I talk about communication styles because everyone communicates differently.
Right.
And so what I found is that when I meet a person because of having this information, if you will, typically now when I communicate with someone within 90 to 120 seconds, if it takes that long, I know where you're at in the quadrant. I might not know your exact letter, but I know if you're on the left side or the right side.
Well, because you've been doing it for so long, sure.
Yeah, and so you start seeing mannerisms. You see people and the way they carry, the way they talk, the tone, the fast pace or slow pace, and that categorizes people quickly. And there's four or five things that when I realize that, what I want to do at that point in time, like my friend Stephen O'Quinn, he is a C, and he worked in a pharma industry for years. He's a consultant now, and he rolled out $100 million products. So he had to sell, but he wouldn't necessarily be a traditional sales typical type, because he's more of an engineer type brain. You know, he's more of a methodical, critical thinker, but he's a PhD in pharma. So he's dealing with doctors.
Right.
So if you think about it, it's perfect for him because he's selling to doctors.
Right.
You know, so it's finding your niche and who your people are, basically. And when you do that and you have something you believe in, then it's kind of easy to influence people into the thing that you really believe in.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's what it comes down to. You got to believe in what you do. You got to know that it's not for everybody. I mean, look, there's plenty of attorneys that are pushing certain kind of trust arrangements and so forth, even in New Jersey, that aren't really necessary. The clients don't really need it. I'm talking clients more out of things than I'm I'm talking them into things. And if they're still committed to do it, we can do it. But I don't like doing things for people that I once had somebody call me. They were adamant about how they wanted their estate. They wanted a trust for this reason. They had lived in another state. They knew about probate and how costly it could be. New Jersey is not a costly probate state. I mean, you don't want to die without a will. It gets more complicated. But if you have a will, and unless you, you know, worth $50 or $100 million, you really doing all that extra trust planning is just cost that you don't need to incur, complicate your life. But there are still people out there that are running seminars for older people and charging them a lot of money. So this couple came to me, they absolutely wanted this arrangement. And I said, you really want me to do this for you? I mean, it's just totally unnecessary. And they ended up going somewhere else. And I just didn't feel comfortable doing something that I knew was just totally a waste.
Right. You know, and that's, you know, sometimes I love Stephen Covey. I used to listen to a lot of his material, and I love what he said.
That's,
you know,
Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, right?
That's right. Yeah. And so he said, made the statement, this has kind of stuck with me, that, you know, you want to create a win-win with your clients. If you win and they lose, then eventually it's going to blow up on you. And here's the other part. Yep. If you lose and they always win, it's going to blow you up.
Yeah.
You know, so
I'm going to leave the industry. You know, I hate this.
Absolutely. Right. So it's got to be somehow, there has to be a synergy. He called it the synergy model. And it has to be this.
It's got to be good for both parties.
If it isn't, then it's always going to be short term. And what I try to get people to understand that I consult with, whether it's teams, you know, some of the companies that are larger have sales teams in different states and different venues that they're dealing with and different products. But when I deal with, it doesn't matter whether it's teams or individuals, it's the same story. Because it's like, you really still have to go through the pattern of the do you have the right people in place? Are they authentically delivering your product and service? Do they believe in your product and service? If they don't fit those three right there, then you're going to have to go back to the drawing board. We've got to work through those steps first. And then once you move past that, then you can actually start talking to them about how to communicate to your clients, because your clients have specific communication needs. And the sooner, the cool thing about the kind of the sales blueprint thought process is this: when I come into your office and I've set an appointment up with you for whatever, and I am schooled in understanding the patterns to kind of figure out who you might be in the first couple of minutes of the conversation, then what I can do is format my communication based on the way you want to be communicated to, not the way I communicate.
Right, because that's not going to work.
This is one of the greatest lessons. If I can give your audience one thing about sales that will change everything for you, is always communicate to your client the way they want to receive communication, not the way you communicate.
Right. No, because you're shoving it down their throat if you're doing it your way.
It's like, but people say, I thought I'm supposed to be authentic. That messes up step two. No. What I'm telling you is you have an authentic way you deliver your message. But notice this, if you have kids, you'll understand this. If you have more than one, what you'll know is that you have to discipline them differently, right?
Yep.
And you have to communicate to them differently.
Yep.
So do you want to communicate them so they receive the message? Of course.
Right.
So when you meet with a client, if I'm a high I and the client is a C, well, they kind of are diametrically opposed, because the high I is kind of flailing their arms. He's the life of the party, or she's the life of the party, and they're really fast talkers and so on and so forth. Well, the C is more consummate, controlled, restrained, monotone.
Right.
They never get excited. They never move their hands when they're talking. They almost, you about fall asleep listening to them talk because they talk in monotone. So if I come into that office and I'm determined that I believe in my product, I'm going to be authentic, but I turned the volume way up, so to speak. I just blew them out of the water.
Too much for them.
It's almost like they couldn't hear how wonderful your product or service was because of you.
Right. Well, you have to develop that skill to evaluate those people. And also it affects who you choose to do business with. If you have the opportunity, you're going to choose the people that more match with your style than the other ones, because the other ones, it's harder to, you know, change what you do. It's funny. I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's an attorney about negotiating. I do a lot of that. I'm not a litigator. I don't go to court, but I do negotiate. I want to keep you out of court. He said, you're very good at negotiating. I got to learn. I said, well, that's because I'm a good salesman. He says, what does sales have to do with that? I go, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm selling my client and I'm selling the other attorney and their client on why this is good for both of them. I have to make it so it is good for both of them. Because if somebody feels like, I mean, I always joke, I said, listen, if both of us feel like we were taken a little advantage of, it was probably a good negotiation. But at the end of the day, you can usually design it where you can figure out what really matters to them, what really matters to your client, what they're willing to give up for the end, come to an agreement. And it's all sales. I mean, it is a total sales process. It's like, I never looked at it that way. I go, well, that's why you're having trouble with negotiations. But it's true. And I think a lot of those personality, assessments, right? Help you if you're good at it. Because look, obviously people aren't going to be as good at the, at those personality assessments as you are, because you do this for a living all the time, but they can get good at it. And it can improve the way they interact with people, you know?
Well, anyone can learn this, because at the end of the day, it comes down to the simple point. There's basically four personality types, and everyone's primarily one. Now, obviously, everyone has a secondary.
That's a good point.
That's right. That's exactly right. And so, and they also, if you look at the, when you take the test, they have colors in each one of the letters. So there's actually a hint of color in all four of them.
There's a phase.
Because you've got, you know, you've got two parents, you've got two sets of grandparents. So you're not just one thing, but you are primarily one communication style and one personality style. So when I teach people this, what I do is try to get people to understand the top and the bottom of the quadrant. And then if I can get them to understand, and the left and the right of the quadrant, like the left side is the DI. D's up top, I's at the bottom. I mean, I'm sorry, DC. And then at the, on the right side, it's IS. And so what you have is, if I can get them to understand, like the D's are more direct. They're usually, they're direct, and they're not, they don't mix words.
Right.
And they're usually not really that, they can be excited, you know, moving people, but they're definitely fast and forward. The I's are the same way, except they're a little bit more animated.
Right.
So, you know, if I can take, and the S's and the C's are a slower, methodically moving people. So when I talk to people, I just get four or five things. I don't try to teach them the whole thing, because you don't need the whole thing. What you need to understand is, when you get into a room, where are they most likely at? And then taper your communication.
So it could become a tool for them. Yeah,
that's right.
They're not becoming their PhD, so it's not.
That's exactly right.
Right, because, and for you, like, it's probably more subconscious. For them, it has to be conscious until they become better at it.
If you look, here's the thing: let's say you see four or five clients a day, in a week's time, you'll know, you'll be able to tell.
Yeah, because you've been evaluating 20 people in a week.
That's exactly right. So if you evaluate 20 people in a week, by the end of that week, you're going to have a good idea every time you meet someone within a couple minutes of where they might fall, because you're going to be thinking about the process. And then you can start tailoring your communication that your company wants you to carry to the client. You can start tailoring that to their individual styles. And then that way, look, here's the thing. I have a module on rapport in the course, and it's one of the books. So rapport is really simple. Really, all people prefer others reflecting themselves back to them. That's what rapport stands for. Really, all people prefer others reflecting themselves. That's the acronym.
Yeah.
And so what happens is, we're basically, as humans, narcissistic people. We're self-absorbed.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in what you want.
It's human nature. You got a lot on your mind.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. So you're out there trying to make a living doing what you do for your wife, your family, your dreams, your goals, your desires, not mine, right? So when you go see clients, that's not really a bad thing.
You just got to recognize it. Yeah.
That's right. So when you do that, if you learn how to actually get into their world and be it more about influencing for the proper right reasons of what you're bringing to the table, man, you'll start, your sales will increase. They'll just go up naturally, because you'll stop being so, so salesy, I guess would be the.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and, most of all, help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000.
That's LAW to 21000 to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show. It turns people off. Now let's talk about a little bit about anxiety, right? Because obviously your friend, when you first got started and you were helping him over your 6 weeks of coffee, and you coach other people, when you're getting started in sales or if you're struggling in sales, there's a lot of anxiety that goes with that about dealing with people and that now they're dealing with you. They got all the stuff to think about, right? And they're like, oh, I got to wait. I got to put this guy in a box and then he does this and I better act this way. And so how do you help people kind of, you know, take the air out of the balloon in that regard when it comes, because I hear different things from different people that I've interviewed.
Right. Normally what I do is, you know, each person's different. And if it's a team, obviously I have to kind of figure out who the leader of the team is and kind of communicate with them. But what I try to do is not make it overwhelming. You see, we're built with this fight and flight mechanism in us. And if you scare us, we're going to run or we're going to fight. And it's like, you don't really want that to happen. You want to keep that down. You don't want that to come up. And so what I try to do is find where people are. So with my friend, this is what I did with him. I'll just give you a little bit of background. What I did with him is I started talking to him about his desires and dreams that he has for him, his life and his family. And I started talking to him about what I perceive as his gifts that he carries because I knew him. And so I focused him on things I knew a little bit about him and also his dreams. So when he went out.
So he feels good about what he's doing.
That's exactly right. And so he went out and started communicating from what I like to call a fully alive place, because I had engaged his dreams and engaged something inside of him that made an emotional connection. When I did that, then he starts going out in a different mental state, an empowered state versus a disempowered state. He's not worried about being anxious because he's just going to go be him. See, I try to get people. It's such a big deal. People miss this so much. It's like we gloss over it. You can only be you. Hello. I mean, you can't be someone else. You can fake being someone else, but eventually it's going to show up. It's like when my dad, when I was a kid, my dad said, look, when you tell the truth, you don't have to worry about the story changing because it's always the same, or it's the same
point. That's how liars get caught.
That's right. Yeah. But when you tell a lie, you have to keep making up lies to cover the last one because it wasn't true to start with, right?
Right.
Such profound wisdom in that. Because what happens is, if you just, this is what takes the pressure off people. I so much try to get people to be comfortable with who they are.
Right.
It's a kind of an identity issue. And if I can get that, if I can get some emotional connection there and they're like, wow, I'm okay. I'm pretty awesome. You know, and then they go out and they actually start applying themselves without thinking about being nervous because they're just going to be them. Because look, when we got on this conversation today, you didn't have to try to be anybody but you.
No. Right? I don't want to be. That's a lot of pressure.
So you're not nervous.
You had to be someone else.
See, you're not nervous at all.
Right. No, not at all.
You're just going to be showing up with you. And there's no fight or flight. It's just he's either going to like me or he's not. And if he doesn't, I don't have to talk to him again. Right.
Right.
So, when you start from that place, then you're already empowered. You're 50% past most salespeople, because most salespeople don't understand that element. And so I have kind of the 7-step process that I work with people. If I coach them individually, kind of in private, that it kind of, the first thing I start with is their desires. And the second thing is their strengths or their natural gifting. And then I move from that forward. And it's kind of like a personal destiny discovery thing that I work with people on, because I found out that if people really know who they are and they can represent well who they are and the company they're representing or the product or service, then the other stuff will take care of itself.
Right. Because if they don't know who they are, they're so nervous, they're not even listening to the other person's talking and they're talking them. I mean, you've seen the guys that they can't stop talking because they're so nervous. They have this thing in their head, like, I got to keep talking. If I keep talking and this guy doesn't say anything, he's not going to leave and he won't say no. But at the end of the day, the guy's not even listening to you anymore. You know, it's frustrating. And I've been in a lot of sales organizations in my career, worked for insurance companies and things like that. And life insurance, for example, my dad's been in the business since the 60s. That's a tough industry because you're selling something that people need but don't want and can't get when they really need it. So they got to buy it ahead of time when they're healthy. So it's a very intangible type of product. You don't get to sit them in the car and smell the leather and feel the roar of the engine and how it makes you feel physical. It doesn't make you feel anything. Now, I guess it makes you love your family, but you know, so those, the sales training in those businesses are, you know, at a crazy level, but it's still, there's not a lot of individualism, like where they sit down and say, hey, you know, you can do this if you love what you do as yourself. I think that's the missing link of all the stuff I've read and studied. It's the recognition that you can sell, promote your product, promote your service, whatever, comfortably, right? It doesn't have to be uncomfortable. And I think a lot of people think of selling as something that's got to be uncomfortable. Like, well, I'm going to sell, this is going to be very uncomfortable. It doesn't have to be that way. The guys that are successful don't feel that way. It's not uncomfortable.
They don't feel that way at all. And this is kind of like the, you know, the first three or four things that I work people through. It's interesting because within the authenticity chapter and module, I talk about what makes you fully alive. What do you burn for? What gets you excited? What makes you get up in the morning? What makes your heart beat faster? I ask some of those questions because I'm really trying to drill down on who you are.
Right.
Because one of the things that I figured out, this doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. Do you want to be around people that are alive or dead?
Yeah, right? I would hope not dead. Then they should be a mortician.
Right. Or do you want to be around people who are empowered, animated, and seem full of life and have life by the tail? Or do you want to be around the opposite of that? Disempowered, their shoulders are down. You don't want to be around people like that. So if you can conquer the empowerment piece of who you are and bring a full vibrating you to the table, whatever that is, because look, my wife is an F, and there's on the lower right quadrant, and she's almost kind of opposite me, but she's perfect for me because she kind of gets the rough edges off me, right? So, but her vibrating at a high level looks completely different than me.
I'm sure.
For me, I'm moving, my hands are moving. If you take my hands away from me, I wouldn't be able to talk, you know? So I am like animated, where she can be just as passionate about a subject that we're talking about, and she could influence me just as well, but she's going to do it in her way.
Right.
And it's so cool when you see people. I mean, one of the things that's rewarding when you're coaching people is when you see the light bulb go off.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God.
Like nobody's ever said this to them before. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, they were a caterpillar. Now they are a butterfly. It's like when you see that metamorphosis in people and they get it. This is what happened to my friend. This is what kind of inspired part of this process, which I had taught some of these things within the company.
The sound guy. The roadie guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's right. And so, but what happened with him, I had been teaching this in my businesses for years, but I had never really coached someone individually at this depth outside of the companies that I ran. And so when I did this and he came in that day where he looked like he'd had a born again experience, you know, like something like the light bulb went off. I'm like, man, this stuff really works. You know, I knew it worked in my company.
Right.
But
it work? Yeah. Why wouldn't it work outside your company?
And when it did, it was just like, it turned me on, because one of the things, one of my values, highest needs probably, is growth and contribution. And I love to grow. So I have something to contribute. You said, you know, I got 6 books sitting over here about all the time I'm trying to read through, you know, and I'm like, I'm with you. I'm always growing. I buy half a dozen at a time, you know, books. And so I want to grow so that I can become, so I'll have something to contribute. Hopefully this conversation is contributing to your audience.
Absolutely. I think you brought up something that's very telling and important. I'm reading, amongst the several books that I'm reading, one of them is one of Abraham Hicks's books, The Laws of Attraction. This was and the Laws of Attraction, right? Yep. But I think it's true that people don't realize that we're all made of energy, right? I mean, we're all electricity, that's right. And that's our whole body. So if you are, and a lot of people have said to me, you know, like, well, I don't know if I believe in that. I said, it's not a question of belief. If right. you are a positive person and you're excited and in your own way, you know, without overwhelming yourself, and right. you put out positive things and you feel good about what you're doing, there's no question that people are going to feel that. And if it's the opposite of that, where we're depressed and we're sad and whatever, you're going to attract those people. Because I don't think there's really, really a word in English for like the opposite of attracting somebody? Like you don't distract somebody, you don't, you expel them, I guess. But we attract everything, good or bad.
That's exactly
and,
right.
And they just, and people don't realize it, that they're just poisoning their own well until they have. And I think that's the light bulb, right? That goes off, that they start feeling good about themselves and things start changing. And they're like, wow. And they don't realize that it wasn't that, you know, all of a sudden something you did made all this business come to them.
That's right.
The business was there. It was the energy that they're putting out and the messages they're sending and how they feel about themselves that it like penetrates your being and you don't even realize that you're turning somebody off and you're attracting bad things into your life. Cause you know, people like this, right? They're just, it's unfortunate. They, you know, and hopefully maybe they find religion or maybe they find a mentor or whatever that turns them around. But some people that doesn't happen to, you know, and it's And I think it's really good. And I think that if you talk about the things that you see, so what I wanted to ask you was, so way back, right, you started working with these two guys, you said, and they were professional soccer players, whatever, and they really got it when it come to, and I'm not sure they've realized, I don't know if you knew, if they realized why they were so good at what they do. So was that more of a self-taught thing, meaning you're working with them and observing them and learning from them, or did you have a mentor or somebody who actually sat down with you and said, hey, let me teach you these things, or did you really have to kind of figure it out yourself?
So it's a little bit of both. So I've definitely had, so out of those couple guys, we were in this network marketing company and there were a couple people above them that were really super successful. And they gave me their time. And, you know, I love what John Maxwell said. I don't know if you know his story, but when he was young, before anybody knew who he was, he would go and find the most successful people, a person he thought he could have lunch with.
That was the early advice I got in my career to do that.
Right. And so he would
find the guys that are successful and learn from them.
That's right. So he would go and buy the person lunch, take a pad and a pen, and ask the person for an hour or two, however long they would go for lunch, let them eat. And he never ate at any of the lunches.
Right.
He sat and took notes and asked questions.
Yeah.
And this is how, and he's done this his whole lifetime. Of course, the bigger he got in life, he could get big in front of bigger people.
Right,
and that's the point. But it's like, if you, there's always someone, like one of the things that I love to do is that I love to pay back, because I've had so many people pour into my life. Some of them, and I believe in having mentors at every level of your life.
Yeah, sure.
I believe that you could have mentors spiritually. You also could have some physically. Look, I have a guy I work out with who runs a CrossFit gym here. He's as fit as anybody you'll ever see. And so he's my mentor in that area. I'm not as fit as he is, right?
Right.
But these people, so here's the thing. What happens with the mentoring piece is that the only thing in your life that changes is when you change your standards and beliefs.
Right.
Basically, when you change what you're going to measure your life by and what you're going to believe about you and your will, or either your
you don't grow if you don't change. Something. Right.
That's right. So what happens is that when you start, I was working out the other day. I'll just give you this kind of for instance, and then we can talk about some other things. But I was working out the other day, and I'm 59. I'll be 60 in November. So I'm probably the oldest person at the gym, you know, in this CrossFit group.
I hope
because
not.
most of them are in their 30s and 40s.
Yeah, right.
CrossFit,
probably. For
you know?
CrossFit,
so there are a couple people that may be late 40s, early 50s that are not far from me. But what I realized is I worked out the other day and I was walking out the door. And this is where your self-talk is really important. You're talking about the law of attraction. This is where it's really important.
Yeah.
So I was walking out the door and I was just, I mean, that workout beat me down hard.
I'm sure.
So I'm walking out the door and I thought, I had this thought because I've trained myself like this. I was like, wait a minute. I just worked out with people that were 40 years old and younger, and I'm almost 20 years older than them, and I rocked that workout.
Yeah, look at me. Yeah.
Look at me. When I compare my standards, see, my standards way up here. It's great to have great standards, because even if you can't reach them, look, I'll give you this study. Check this out. So I think it was Stanford University, one of the big universities. I'm pretty sure it was Stanford. Did a study years ago on people that were optimists and people who were pessimists. Mm-hmm. And what they found in the study is the pessimists were always 100% accurate in their assessment of what they could accomplish. Always.
Right, because they never strived for, they never said, I could do better than this. I'm optimistic.
Check this out. So the optimists always over-evaluated what they could accomplish.
Right.
Always.
Right.
Without fail. But here's the thing. The optimist always accomplished 10 times more.
Of course.
Than the pessimist, even though they might not have never hit the unrealistic goals they set.
Right.
So the law of attraction works that way. When you set the standard here and you work toward that standard, look, it's like the guy said, hey, go for stars. You might at least get stardust.
Yeah. Don't they say if you strive for excellence, you'll be great. If you strive for greatness, you'll probably be good. If you only strive for goodness, you'll probably be fair.
If you're good, look, in the world we live in today, if you're only going to be mediocre and good, you're not going to excel in anything.
You're not going to get out of the gate. Right. Exactly.
That's right. Just set the standard. It's like, it's not, you know, that's where mentoring comes in, where, you know, and really coaching is nothing more than pulling the gold that already exists in people out of them. It's really, that's what it is. It's realizing what's inside of people and pulling that out. I use the Tiger Woods analogy all the time. No one that's ever coached Tiger Woods has ever beat him playing golf, period.
Of course not.
Well, why would he need a coach?
Because that's how you get better at what you do. Always improving your
craft.
He
puts himself in there to help pull these little nuances out. These little idiosyncrasies he's not recognizing, and boom, and suddenly he's done this with the ball or that with the ball. So it's like these great athletes see the value of having a coach or a mentor.
Yeah, they all have coaches and trainers and mentors.
Absolutely. In every area of their life. They have a diet. I mean, when you get big enough, you have a coach in every realm of your life if you get high enough up in that sport, in any of the sports.
Yeah.
And it's like try to lean into that. In the early days, I'll tell you what I did. Other than the guys I could get to, you can always buy books. Leaders are readers. Get people's books. Get their we get CDs. Believe it or not, we used to get little tapes. You know, the little.
I used to drive around with those books where you open them up, right, and the cassettes were stuck in the plastic.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
And I had to change the tape without having a car accident. You know?
That's right. And listen to these people.
Yeah.
Absorb the information, and as you can, I love the physical contact people you can actually have lunch with, because it takes it to another level. But a lot of times when you're young in business, or when you're nobody, basically, for a lack of better words, you can't get to some of these people.
Maybe not. Right. But there's so much good stuff out there.
Oh, but you can get the books.
Right.
You can read the books. You can listen to.
And if you're on the road, don't waste the time listening to music. Learn.
It's called net time. No extra time.
Yeah.
Put something good in that. Don't listen to the radio station. Put a podcast on.
Your mind.
Put a CD.
Easy. You just download it while you're on the road. You don't have to go buy it anywhere.
Open your iPhone and whatever's on there, you know, get that thing on there and listen to it, because it's like, this is what creates value for you. You pour good stuff in, good stuff comes out. This is the law of attraction.
Yeah.
The law of attraction is you pour good stuff in, good stuff comes out. If you program a computer poorly, it's going to be a poor computer.
Yeah.
The same way with you.
That's true. You know, it's funny because, and I guess when I was younger, I didn't listen to him as much as I should, but my dad, who's been in sales since probably 1965, started with shoes, got into insurance and whatever. When I got out of law school and I said, listen, I want to learn how to sell. I want to go work for these organizations. I'll do legal work, but I also want to sell. I'll get licensed. I want to learn. He said, and he sent me out because he's already in his 40s and 50s and 60s. And he sent me out to all the people that he knew were successful. And he says, listen, have coffee, lunch, whatever, with a different guy every month. Mm-hmm. And I did that for like 2 or 3 years. And I learned what their successes were, what their failures, what they're struggling in. Who do they mentor with? How do they get better at what they do? And you learn real quick. And I think a lot of people that's one of the best pieces of advice you can give to people is to seek out people that have done it, that are better than you, not even in your industry, that you can get access to, because eventually you get access to somebody, right? You're going to ask somebody, connect with them, LinkedIn, hey, would you talk to me? Somebody's going to want to give it back, because that's how I pay. So if you mentored me, the way I pay you back is by helping other people from what I learned with you, right?
Absolutely.
And I think that people can really, really push the learning curve and become more successful as entrepreneurs, more successful in business, and more happy in life, you know, yep, with all the things that they do, if they just ask somebody to help them. Don't try and do it on
your own. Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. So my girls, my oldest daughter is 26, getting ready to be 27. My youngest just turned 22, so they're grown now. But when they were little, probably my oldest was probably maybe 8 or 10, and my youngest was, she's 4 years different. So in that same age gap, I started talking to them about this thought process, because one of the things that I started learning probably about in my early 40s, and I don't know, I had a significant something happened to me that kind of had a, in my past, kind of a meltdown in business and life. And so I, there's some things that happened. I won't go through that whole story, but the point was that, and I started teaching them this after it, because I started realizing this is the way life works. So I taught them from a young age, life is about who you become, not what you gain.
Right.
Don't put the emphasis on gain. Gain will come and follow you and track you down and run you over if you become big enough.
Right.
At everything you do. This is the law. This is the way I teach the law of attraction.
Yeah.
Because what happens is who you become in life is what you attract.
Of course. No.
Right. So if you become big enough in life, all your dreams, all your goals, all the things you want will come to you. Right. You don't even have to go look for them. You have to, but your job is to become and to dig the greatness that's already inside of you. You already pre-wired.
Right. You got the potential. It's all there.
That's exactly right. That's right. One of my mentors said, look, God gives you potential, but he won't complete it for you. That's your job.
Yeah.
And I thought, there's so much wisdom in that. Right. It's like, you got to go put the work in.
Isn't it like, what's the story? Where you're on a lake in a lightning storm in an aluminum boat. And you're praying to God.
Yeah.
Says,
yeah.
And you end up in heaven. And he says, why did you save me? He's like, I gave you a boat.
Exactly.
Right. You could pray to God, but you better row toward shore real fast.
Really quickly. That's exactly right.
Exactly. You know, I think as parents, we struggle that we want, you know, we get to a point where there's a lot of things we wish we knew when we were 15. And maybe we're not capable of, you know, because you got to remember when you're 8 and 4 and 15, your mind works differently when you're 40. Right. So you can't absorb things the same way. You look at the world differently. But I always say to myself, boy, if I knew and understood and accepted when I was 25, what I knew when I was 45 and now 50, 55, I think I would be at a different level. But that's not the deal. You know, it doesn't work that way.
Well, I mean, what you hope is that you can pay it with your kids.
You help other, right, you help your
what
kids.
What you hope you can pay it forward through the things you've learned.
Yeah.
Is what I realize is I didn't, now my oldest daughter, now she is a business, she's 26 years old and she has her own business and she coaches, she has this, it's an empowering women thing, and she coaches people all over the United States, and she's got foreign clients and she's only 26.
Wow.
And so what I realized is that she, a lot of the things you pour into your children, it might take years before you see it grow out of them.
Right.
And so you really, the and this is the great thing about mentoring, and you probably, you know this as well. It's like when you pour things into people, eventually, if you pour enough good in, good comes out.
Of
That's
course.
Just the way it is.
Yeah.
You know, so you just,
there's nothing else in there to come out. It's got to be good.
Right. You pour the good in, and hopefully it pushes any bad out, and then you start bubbling good. Nothing but
right.
Good.
Well, I think you want your children to go through learning experiences early on, because I've had my children. I got three. I got a son who's 20, and my daughters are 17 and 15, so they're in high school.
Okay.
And I've had conversations with my son, just like I'm sure I had with my dad, although I don't remember, you know, about things where you don't understand, Dad. This is the way it is now. And then, you know, listen, I've been on Earth for 50 years. You've been on Earth for 15. So, and then, you know what? Later on, they come back. They go, you know, man, you were right. I go, well, yeah, because I've experienced it. And then slowly but surely, like you said, that next time they're like, you know what? Maybe I should take a different approach to that. Or maybe that's true about what's going on. Or maybe I should read that book that my dad threw on my bed 4 years ago. You know, I just sent him The Laws of Attraction, the Abraham Hicks book.
You know, the thing about it, it's amazing how smart our parents get to be when we're 25, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I said, you know what I told him? I said, when he was 17 and I told him, I said, you know what the only thing we have in common is that when I was 17, I thought I knew everything, too. You know, and you find out that you don't.
It's so true.
It's so true. But you know what? It is true. If you recognize that when you remember you're 17, your mind didn't work like it works now. Yes. Like experience has a lot to do with that kind of stuff. I'm reading another good book. I forget the author, but it's about Kaizen, you know, the Japanese principle of doing a small Kaizen, changes lead to big. Yeah, yeah. Very, very fascinating. The same person that told me.
I have one that's called the Kaizen Way or something that I read years ago. I still have a copy of it. And
yeah, that whole area, the philosophy of is very interesting. It's fascinating. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Don, I appreciate you coming on. We'll put some links in the show notes so people can now I know some of your books are available online or the sales books online too?
They're all, all the books are online. If you go to, if you go to my website, all three of my books are on my website. You click on, they'll take you to Amazon. You can buy them.
Perfect. So we'll put a link in the show notes.
You can go to Amazon and do it. But it's probably the easiest way to get all three of them in front of you if you're interested in them. And then of course I have a sales course and then I have a blueprint course that I have on there as well. And those are accessible from the website. So
good. So we'll put a link in the show notes to your website. I can't thank you enough for taking the time. I know it's Friday afternoon and it's been a long week, but I appreciate coming on, sharing all your thoughts. And I hope that all the people that listen out there, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're getting started, or if you've been in business for a long time and you're struggling with not feeling good about what you're doing and just realize that it's okay to be a salesperson because you're really helping people and that there are ways to better yourself.
Absolutely.
By seeking out these resources that you people like you put out into the world. So I thank you very much. And I thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed being here with you and your audience.
All right. Thanks, Don.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.